Hey guys. Hey guys, I'm Michael and I'm alcoholic. It's good to see all of you again. So for those that weren't here last week, I touched on how it works. I touched on what my experience was in step one and step two, what my experience was in the reading of step three. I touched on what I looked like as the actor, director, and producer. I talked on how I used to set these stages in my mind, in my head, and in my life, and in my drinking, and how I caused harm to everyone around me. Last week, we ended on the third step prayer. And I'm feeling in my heart that, you know, that we should read the third step prayer again. So I'm going to kick this thing off with the third step prayer on page 63 for those who care to follow. It says that we are now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me, and to do with me as Thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. And, you know, this is kind of like what I was sharing about last week when, you know, I told you guys spiritual experience number one that I had in the rooms was coming to that place and asking another man to sponsor me. That was very hard, you know. And then spiritual experience number two was getting on my knees in front of a man, holding his hands, doing this third step prayer. And you know, at the end here, where it talks about making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Listen, I didn't know what ready looked like. All right? I didn't even understand what I was doing. All right? But like I told you guys last week, when I heard that word, the bondage of self, I knew what the bondage of self looked like. 8 years of abuse. 8 years of self-will run riot in my drinking. 8 years of exhausting every person, every place, everything. And I'm grateful that when I heard the bondage of self, immediately I felt conviction towards my truth and what that looked like, even though I didn't understand what, like, you know, what was really happening, you know. But the posture of my heart was exactly this last sentence, where I was abandoning that bondage. You know, I knew Peter got sober, my sponsor, right? I knew he got sober. I knew whatever he did. You know, in some of the earlier pages in our reading, it talks about, you know, an alcoholic can normally win the confidence of another alcoholic, right? If he's what? Armed with the facts about himself. You know, and Peter, when he presented himself to me, you know, not only was he armed about the facts about his truth and his drinking, but he aligned it with the words in this book, which allowed me to develop my own truth and my own experience. So it says here, we found it very desirable to take the spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. Once again, in this case, that was happening with my sponsor in the room, right? But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. I have that underlined. You know, because I found myself in early sobriety, and even throughout my sobriety, where, you know, I needed to speak things into existence that were positive over my life, but there couldn't be anything attached to it. You know, that, like, without reservation, it kind of falls into the same line as, you know, abandoning myself, right? Like, so, you know, there was things I needed to tell myself, and when I was telling myself those things, I needed to abandon any old conceptions, any old ideas, because any ideas that I did have, perhaps those ideas came from a place of a life ran on self-will. And that's why in the third step it talks about, right, the first requirement is that we be convinced that life ran on self-will can hardly be a success. And I told you last week that I had, you know, it took 8 years of straight alcohol abuse for me, you know, to really get to that place where I knew that, like, there wasn't anything with me in it wasn't going to be successful whatsoever. I tried. I tried to manage and control. It didn't work. So, you know, and that's the same thing, right? Like, when I'm coming into this program, I got to let go absolutely, right? I can't have reservations. If I have a reservation to drink, I'm screwed. If I have a reservation of, I'm just going to do, you know, half of these steps, you know what I mean, right? Or, you know, if I'm just gonna, you know, come to this one meeting, you know, and then the rest, you know, right? Like my posture coming into these rooms should look like a, you know, it should come from a place of a dying man, a desperate woman, right? Because that's what we were. And so it says here, this was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. Remember, I told you I had my spiritual experience number two in these rooms. I felt something, you know, mind you, I hadn't gotten on my knees and prayed in a very long time, you know. So, you know, there was something happening in that, you know. But like it says here, you know, it's only a beginning, you know. And I work with other men as well. And we don't get caught up. We don't dissect this thing early on. You know, some of the guys that I've worked with, you know, they're dying men. They're dying. You know, I might not be able to take them entirely through this book, you know, right? Like, and I've had experiences like that. Like, some men I worked with, I took them line by line. And then there was some men that, you know, I just had to take them through quickly. And that worked for them. And then once they got better and they got sober, then we came back to the drawing board and I took them line by line, because now they're sober and they're willing to help others, right? So, you know, so sometimes, you know, it really depends on the individual, you know. I've worked with guys where they want to know line by line. You know, and then I've worked with guys too where that wasn't the case at all. You know, I had to, like, not dumb this thing, but I had to keep it very simple. you know, because I could overcomplicate this thing, right? And that's why I read How It Works last week, because my mind will tell me that this is a tall order, and then I won't be willing to go along with it, right? Or it may bring me into balking. So, it's just the beginning. You know, there's more work. So it says here, next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, keyword, followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. So, like I was sharing with you guys last week, when I did 1, 2, and 3 with my sponsor, I would go on and I would sign a contract in this book that, you know, here on out, Michael is now willing to go to any lengths over victory over alcohol, right? And, you know, and like I was showing you last week, right, you know, my sponsor drew in the back of my book a line in the middle, a line on this middle, and he had me write, he wrote resentments, he wrote fears, harms, and sex. And I would go on, and I would have to make my list. And so, you know, I say that because that was the step, right? Like, all right, we just did steps 1, 2, and 3. Now we launched into a course of vigorous action. This is the vigorous action, trying to get through this list, right? And I say it like that because early on, as a newcomer, I'm struggling to even understand what's really happening. And then I'm telling myself, dude, am I even mad at these people? Right? Like, you know, like I don't even understand like what resentment really means, you know? And so, you know, I have to call my sponsor and, you know, I tell him like, yeah, I know I got like a few people, but I don't think I'm mad at anybody, you know? And he was like, yeah, keep writing. Keep going. Pause, pray. Because mind you, right, I told you guys this last week, that a part of me signing that contract, being willing to go to any lengths, every day I was reading 2 pages out of the big book on his voicemail. Pages 85 to 88. Right? So, you know, and I'm reading those 2 pages, and I'm being told in those 2 pages, pray, meditate, pray, meditate, pray, meditate, pause, 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 right? You know, and set your plans, you know, right? And so I would take the suggestion. I would pause. God, you know, I'm start praying to God now. Give me the names. Right? And, you know, little by little, you know, the names start going, you know. And at the time, Peter was like, Mike, listen, I want you to go all the way back. You know, even if you're not mad at these people anymore, we want to find the pattern. We want to find the causes and conditions of what makes you drink, what makes you tick, what drives the compulsion. Right? And so, once again, right, I'm at that place where I don't know. And that's the sweet spot, when you're in that place of I don't know, because you really don't question anything. You're just like, okay, what do I got to lose? I'm already at a loss. So, you know, just writing. But anyways, let's just continue reading. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding process. and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsalable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. You know, it's interesting, right? Like, earlier on, you know, it tells us, you know, at once, strenuous effort, right? And now, once again, right, like, it's saying, you know, get rid of them promptly, right? Like, this isn't something we could really, like, sleep on, you know? This isn't something that, like, you know, oh, I'm just going to take my good old time, you know, and... Because, dude, the ego is sleeping, man, you know, and the ego wants to bring you right back to a drink real quick, you know, and every day, you know, we got to dive into this work. Every day, you know, we have to or we die, right? Now, I'm not saying that's all of us, but there are some that are of the hopeless variety and, you know, and they're the real alcoholic. And they can't afford to rest on their laurels. They can't afford to balk, you know, because a drink for them leads them right back into homelessness. And then, you know, and then something. I had a guy that I hired when I was managing a kitchen in a supermarket, and his name we called him Angry Bill. Remember him, Tom? Angry Bill, and they called him Angry Bill because Bill wasn't doing the program. He didn't want to have anything to do with steps. He was from the old school, didn't believe in any of that. Literally, this guy was dry. He was irritable, restless, and discontent, you know, at all times. And, you know, I gave him an opportunity, you know, and he worked. And literally, he's working for 2 weeks every day. He's miserable, you know, and he's just dry. And then, you know, we help him get an apartment. He gets a little boarding room. He gets a boarding room. Once he gets the boarding room and he gets the paycheck, you know, right? Boom. Drinks. You know, and he drank and, you know, and... he tried to come in the next day to work, he couldn't manage, you know, and then I never seen him again, you know, he just disappeared. And then I got a phone call one day that, you know, that he got into an accident. He was drunk and he ran out in front of a car and he died, you know, and this literally was within a week from the day he picked up a drink. You know what I mean? Right. Like, what about that guy? If he would have promptly, you know what I mean, right, did this work, you know, perhaps that wouldn't have been the case, right? Like, you know, so there are people that can pick up a drink and they don't make it back. You know, most of the time you think about the drug addict, you know, like, you know, they're the ones that go fat, you know, before the guy who drinks. But no, there are people that pick up a drink and they don't make it back here, dude. You know, and God bless them. Anyways, kind of went on a tangent there. Kind of forgot where I'm at. I'm really good at doing that. So if you guys got to bring me back, you know, don't hesitate. So we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. Keyword, honestly, right? First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways, what had defeated us, we consider its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not been only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. So last week, once again, right, I spoke on the threefold disease, you know, right? You know, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And so once again, right, like, you know, resentment being the number one offender, right? Like, you know, for me, I would get resentful and, you know, I would obsess over it.
How dare that person?
You know what I mean, right? And you know, like I could have let someone affect me and bring me into a resentment, and you know, and then I could obsess over it all day. And you know, and the only thing that brings me comfort and ease, the only thing that kind of tones that down, is a drink, right? And you know, so you know, once again, right? This, for what this is saying to me is that, you know, I got to be very careful. I'm the real deal. Like, you know, I can't afford to live life with resentments without a solution and without properly getting, you know, getting rid of these things, you know, because I'll feed that hole, you know, right? I'll feed that hole with all sorts of, you know, drinking, drugs, money, you know, whatever it may look like, right? I'll feed that malady, you know, and it runs out every single time. You know, and so in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, principals with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were all burned up. So once again, right, like I make the list, like I was telling you guys. It says here, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name injuries. What is our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal and sex relationships, which have been interfered with. We were usually as definite as the example. And then it gives this example of, you know, Mr. Brown, the cause. So, you know, I have that here. You know, and so what I, you know, my sponsor, what he had me do was, I just so you guys know, in my sobriety, I've had more than one sponsor. You know, I went through the work the first time with Peter. My sponsor, my current sponsor, is Kevin S. And I would recently go through another four step. I found it in my sobriety that I must continue to move forward. I found in my sobriety that early on I was warped. I didn't understand everything. And so now that I had gotten some time, now that I had built a relationship, you know, with my higher power, now that I had some experience, I chose that. You know, I was led to go back to the drawing board and see if it looked differently. And it did. So, you know, my sponsor, what he had me do was, on the first page, he wrote, you know, he gave me like this little, it's like a little like cheat sheet system, you know what I mean, right? Like where he had me write the part self-affected. And, you know, and he had me write pride, self-esteem, relationships, sex relationships, ambition, serenity, security. He had me write financial security, you know, pocketbook, right? And then, you know, and then he gave me a definition for each word because once again, right, I think I know words, but, you know, I really don't, right? So I had the definition. And then there was this other column, you know, it was like a consider column, and you know, and I didn't know what that was about, right? I didn't know what any of this was, to be honest with you. I just did it, you know, and then he had me write like my mistake and you know, self-seeking dishonesty. So this was like a little go-to, you know, and then he would take me on and he would write these lines, and this is what mine looked like, you know, and if you guys can see it. And so the first column, just like here, you know, I'm resentful at. So my first was my dad, right? So, you know, I'm resentful at my dad, you know, and then the cause, right? You know, where it says here, his attention to my wife, right? So, you know, for me, just to share one with you so you can, so it can be tangible, right? You know, when my mom was on her deathbed at the time, which it seemed like, she asked him to stop smoking, and he said F no. So my mom had this, like, you know, she her heart failed, and she had gotten, you know, she got sent to the hospital, and she had gotten, like, a defibrillator put into her, and you know, and I didn't know what was happening to my mom. All I know is I'm a mama's boy, and you know, and I walk into the hospital room with my dad, and my mom looks very fragile. I've never seen her look that way in my life, you know. And you know, and then the doctor is telling her that it is, you know, she cannot be around smoke, cigarettes. My dad's a chain smoker, you know, and so she grabs his hand, you know what I mean? You know, and you know, she barely moves her hand, but she grabs his hand and she's like, "Gene, you know, can you stop smoking cigarettes for me?" You know what I mean? The doctor says I can't be around it, right? And she said it in such a way, right? And dude, the words that came out of his mouth was, "Oh, F no, I'm not gonna stop smoking cigarettes. You know, what are you, crazy?" You know, and dude, that like set me off, you know, that set me off. The first thing that came to my mind was, you know what I mean, right? How dare you speak to my ma that way, right? Like, now mind you, I'm Italian, so like, you know, like, Italian boys and his moms, right? Like, you know, don't you disrespect my mom, right? Like, and I took that as disrespect, right? So I wrote that down, the cause, right? And then I had to go back to this page and I had to write down what were the parts that affected, you know? And I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And, you know, and so I had wrote, like, you know, self-esteem, and I looked up the definition, emotional evaluation of one's own worth. You know, like, dude, like, if my dad was willing to tell his wife, F no, right? Like, you know, imagine if it was me, his son, right? He's going to say the same thing. How little am I? Right? So it affected my self-esteem. And, you know, I wrote down serenity because, you know, that was one of the things my sponsor had me write, because from that moment on, I had no serenity. I obsessed for weeks over what he said about my mom. And I treated him differently based on that one selfish and self-centered comment that he made. You know what I mean? I would go on and I would treat him different. I would treat that guy like, you know what I mean, right? And never did I ever give him a chance, a shot. You know what I mean, right? Because I saw how shallow he was, right? And my ego, in my mind, and you know, remember I was telling you about how I set stages in my mind, right? You know, only if the rest of the players would do as I wish. Only if my dad would have said what I would have liked him to, what I would have said, right? You know, maybe that day at the hospital it would have been better, right? You know, and but that wasn't the case. And it affected my pride. And, you know, once again, I had this moral pride. Like, you know, it says earlier on, like, you know, many of us have moral convictions galore, right? Like, you know, like we have all these great, you know what I mean? You know, moral, philosophical, you know what I mean? You know, morals that we live by, you know, like, and, you know, and some of us, we try to live up to them, but we cannot, right? And, you know, and so here I have this moral thing in my mind that I'm proud of. This makes me a great person, right? And, you know, and then the minute that, you know, other people don't meet that measure, they're not good enough. And now I'm better than them. You know what I mean, right? And now I mistreat them, you know, and And once again, that's all part of my alcoholism, right? Because now they're not showing up the way I want them to show up. So now I feel less and I drink more, right? And so anyways, that was like the part self-effect. So I wrote it down. And this is basically what this is telling me. This is just to give you an example. So I'm going to read, right? We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Considered it carefully, right? So my sponsor had this consideration column right here. You know what I mean, right? Considered it carefully. So I would go back with him, right? And I'll talk about that. The first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that some people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. She didn't even have to wrong me. You could wrong others and I'll stay sore. You know what I mean? Right? Like, you know, imagine how I am with just that. You know what I mean? Now, if it's affecting me directly, oh, I'll take that to a whole nother level. But anyways, sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Now, I would go on, and I had other causes that kind of like go into this factor right here, you know, of as in war, the victor only seemed to win, right? Like, you know, I continued to allow all these other things take its course, and I would make it into my own manner. And, you know, and I'm becoming the victim, right? I'm allowing myself to be a victim, right? And I'm allowing the victor to win. And dude, it's just insanity. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic whose hope is in the maintenance of growth and a spiritual experience, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when we are harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves out from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. This is what I was trying to say earlier. If you're the real deal, this will be poison. And to live in it contradicts what sobriety, right? And, you know, so if now we get this gift where we get to come into this program and we get to, you know, do this work and we get to, you know, get a new solution, right? You know, we learn new solutions so we don't go back to this poison, right? You know, because it'll take us out. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and the people really dominated us. In the state that wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had a power to actually kill. How could we escape? We sought that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. Now, I'm going to stop here. Going back to this, right? So, you know, the consideration column. So my sponsor, right, at the time, you know, he had me answer this question. You know, did I ever do this to my dad or anyone else, right? Any other person, you know? And then he follows it on with another question. At the time, could I have done anything better? And, you know, so I'm looking at that. I just, once again, I just wrote my resentments down. I just realized, you know, the parts that were self-affected, right? And mind you, I've never seen words like this before. I've never done anything like this before. So it was weird, you know? But I was kind of like at this place of like deflation a little bit, you know what I mean? Because I was feeling emotions that I never knew really how to tap into. And now I come to this point, I look at this question, did I ever do this to, you know, my dad or any other person, You know, how many times did my dad tell me not to go hang out with this person? How many times did my dad tell me don't go drink or don't pick up smoking or can you stop doing this? Can you stop doing that? How many countless girlfriends begged me to stop drinking? They begged me to stop smoking. How many times did I say the same exact words that my dad said? F no, I won't do it for you or anybody. Because I can't. And then the light bulb went off. Could I have done anything better? I didn't have any tools, so no. The way I responded was my best. But the light bulb went off. Man, I thought I was better than my father. But I'm no different than my father. And then that hit me like a freight train. You know, and then I felt shame. You know, I felt shameful. Like, I never gave this guy, the authentic version of myself. Just because of this one delusional thing that I allowed in my head to take me this so far. Now mind you, that delusion, my alcoholism, that delusional thinking, that mirage that's placed in my life, it's attached to the threefold disease. That physical reaction that I get when I'm pissed off, right? The mental obsession. I obsess over it, and now the way I feel and hear about it, and I got to get comfort and ease. And I would go on and I would do this over and over and over again with a shit ton of other people, but dude, I got humbled when I had to answer that question, and immediately I was hit with what my mistake was. Immediately I was able to see the role I played. That perhaps, right? I was self-centered. I was self-seeking. Right? I want my dad to be something that he's not. And then I'm self-centered. I only want what I want. Only if, right? Only if you would have done as I wished you to do. Right? And once again, right? It was quite clear. The light bulb went off. And I would go on and I would have these other experiences that were similar to this. And then it says here, right, this was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Like, I never looked at my dad from that lens point, I always looked at my dad as this guy, right? And mind you, right, in my drinking, I caused all this harm, and my dad was one of those people that didn't want to have anything to do with me. I completely exhausted him in every area of his life. I sucked him dry. Like I told you last week, I'm a parasite. I became a parasite and I sucked all the blood out of him. He didn't want to have anything to do with me. So now I'm looking at it from this lens, right? And I always felt low self-esteem because, I knew I was sick. But now I'm able, and I knew people would say, that guy. That guy's a sick person. I knew that. Right? Based on how they all recoiled when I came around. They didn't want to have anything to do with me. But for now, AA is telling me and doing this work to see it, right? Perhaps my father was sick too. He had an addiction to cigarettes. So did I. He was doing his best, and I couldn't see that. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." I would go on and I would hold on to the sick man's prayer. I would hold on to it very tightly. I realized what going down through all this work that, you know, not only was I sick, but everyone else, either I made them sick or they were just spiritually sick too. And, my sponsor, what he would have me do, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I had 8 causes for my father that were like, you know what I mean, right? Like, you know, so my sponsor, you know what I mean, for from morning to night, for 8 days straight, he had me say the sick man's prayer. I would wake up, I'd say a sick man. I'd read 2 pages out of the big book, I'd say a sick man's prayer for all the people that I, you know what I mean, right? And then you know what? I would go on, because I started my day off in early sobriety saying the sick man's prayer, I would go on with the principles of love, tolerance, patience for other people that happened to have like showed up now. The work was humbling me and how I showed up in other relationships. And when I was at work in early sobriety, I would have managers or I would have people, right, that would trigger me, right? All because I, in the moment, I wasn't pausing. But then I'll never forget those moments where I would feel those knots in my stomach, right? And it would bring me into a submission where it would lead me to a surrender to actually be obedient and having to go into a corner, having to go downstairs into a walking refrigerator, you know what I mean? You know, and just going to pause and pray. And I used to say sick man's prayers at my job, you know, for certain people that would piss me off, you know? And I would go on and I would practice this exercise over, over, over again with all these people that made it to the list and with all the new people that would make it, you know, right? Because in 10, right? 10, I had to live in 10, 11 and down the road, this same principle would apply. And, you know, and even today, you know, when something's triggering me, you know, I'm reminded of those 3 things, right? Those 3 spiritual principles: tolerance, pity, and patience. Those are spiritual principles. I have to live by them. So what's interesting, earlier when we read about in the third step, when we were reading the third step prayer, and it talked about abandoning ourselves utterly to Him, abandoning ourselves utterly to Him in these sick man's prayers. When it talked about, you know, expressing that idea, right? Yeah, expressing that idea, right? Once again, that posture behind saying these words, you know, didn't matter how I said it. It was the sole principle that I was choosing to say them rather than to choose a drink. And so it worked. Anyways, let's move forward. What am I doing with time this time? How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, cool. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chances of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Now, what's interesting is my experience in early sobriety, I was with a solution-based group where, you know, they were going into treatment centers. You know, they had commitments like every single day, and they would take me along with them. And, you know, and I was surrounded with newcomers. And early on, I got to live in the understanding of the principles of love and tolerance, towards the newcomer, helping the newcomer, you know. And as I was new, I too was learning how to help others that were under, you know, that were coming before me after me. So the same love and tolerance I would show that person, it would help me understand how I needed to show up for the people that perhaps wronged me. You know what I mean? Right? And so, you know, the same love that we have in these rooms, I would have to go on and carry out that love, you know, towards the people around me. And I like how it says that, like, you know, we can't be helpful to all people, right? But at least God will show us how to take a kindly view and tolerant view of each and every one. You know, everyone's different, you know, I had to get armed with the facts about myself so I could show back up later on, so I would be able to discern how to walk and how to treat these people differently. But I couldn't do that until I got with myself and I fixed myself. You know, so once again, right, I have to stay plugged into this work. I have to stay armed with the fact. I have to believe. Step two, I have to believe. I have to believe. 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 You know, I have to believe in this work. I have to believe in this power that's carrying me. I have to believe that it's working for all of you. And that if I don't question anything, I just keep it simple, perhaps it will continue to work. And I would go on, and that's what would happen. We cannot be helpful to people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly... Okay. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes, where we had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. Once again, right? It's not about them. It's about me. It's about staying on my side of the street, you know? And dude, like early on, I heard, don't compare, identify, you know, and I had to continue to identify with myself, my truth, what God was showing me, what my sponsor was patiently, tolerantly, kindly, compassionately, encouragingly showing me. You know what I mean? So one day I can show up for someone else and pass this thing along. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we were willing to set these matters straight. And I'm going to stop right there because it's going to go on to fears. And next week, God willing, we'll go through how my experience, what it looked like going through fears, and how I had to put that to rest. Thank you for allowing me to share.